and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is someone who hopes that the ancient Aztecian blade they bought can summon evil from all sources of the universe. It's Anandi Boetes.
Don't you put that bad juju on me. This podcast is 5 minutes early.
Yeah. Matt, Booker's a good kid, isn't he?
Booker is the sweetest. Like, I actually wish we saw a little bit more of him. Like, the first time I watched the movie, I thought, they're quite, like, putting up the time here. But honestly, every time I watch it, I actually want more and more. I would love more Booker. I would love more Char, the older sister. I think those two, yeah, I would have actually liked to see more of. Booker is a sweet kid.
You know what I love about this movie? It's another just Christopher Landon jam that cost $6 million to make. Like, I love how this guy can take a tiny budget and make a Happy Death Day, Happy Death Day to You, Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, and Freaky for next to nothing. And
I
think it's just, when I first watched this movie, I was so impressed on what they did for $6 million. And I felt very vindicated because I was listening to the commentary on the Blu-ray, and he just kept complaining, Landon did, the director, about how cold it was in Georgia because they shot here during the winter. And I was like, yes! Because a lot of northerners, they're like, oh, Georgia isn't cold, but it gets down in the 20s in here, especially at night, and it's really humid. So it just gets in your bones. And that's when they shot this, just in 20-degree nights at night. Doesn't matter where you are. If it's 20 degrees, you're going to be really cold. So because I've been on sets, I've been like 17, and I've been inside an industrial warehouse that holds everything in, and you're just freezing for 14 hours. So I wasn't happy that he suffered, but I'm just happy that other people realize how cold it gets at night in Georgia when you shoot. It made me happy.
I said, yeah, no, that's pretty cool. Yeah. But I mean, I love it. $6 million budget. Oh, that's great. Because this movie looks really great. They really did. There was like good details in the scenes. It didn't look like, a low budget movie at all.
Not at all. I think that's a credit to him, right? Because we've watched independent films before that really try to swing on their budgets. And it's kind of sad sometimes because they can't get everything they need to make the world as expansive as is needed. And in the end, the movie looks really stretched. But I guess on these movies, you never feel the stretch because he's just good at repeating scenes. You have the school, you have the square that you use twice. You have the various homes. Like, it's really low budget. And I kind of dig it. Like, he was talking on the commentary about how in every house they were in, they were always looking for other things to get more production value. And that's just, I guess that's the Blumhouse way, where you get full creative control, but you don't get any more money. So you get $6 million and that's it. And I learned that while shooting this, they had some really windy nights. They had some weather issues, which they had to delay production, which costs more because you have to pay people for that extra day, which means you need to lose things. Mm-hmm. So they had a couple days they had to cancel while shooting. And that really, I mean, this was shot in 35 days. So then they maybe had those built in, but you're still paying for more days than what you expected. So it's like, I don't know. I love this movie. I've spent a lot of time with it recently, and I dig it. Also, like Catherine Newton, I think she's really good in this. She's not as, I guess she's not asked to do as much as Vince Vaughn is, because Vince is able to kind of go free. But I dig her looks in this movie. She's funny.
I love it where she wakes up as the Blissfield butcher and she gets out of bed and the mom's like, oh, honey, like, I've made breakfast. And like one of the first things she does as him is the dental dam just drops out of her mouth. I love that little moment. Like, she's got these great little, and I mean, yeah, because she's now all like playing this serious serial killer dude that's completely antisocial and just horrible. But yeah, she's got some fun moments too. Like, I liked what she did with it. I thought it was great.
And her walk changes. Like, she gets a different kind of stance and gait. Just the kind of like, I when her mom's pushing her into the kitchen. It must have been fun for both of these actors. And you could tell in the behind the scenes stuff, they really enjoyed it. I bet it was liberating a little bit for Vince Vaughn, because he was recently in Dragged Across Concrete and Brawl in Cell Block 99, which are incredibly violent Craig S. Zoller films. So this one's incredibly violent, actually. The tennis kills, geez Louise. But you could tell he loved it, because he got to be silly on set. But it never felt like he was being a caricature. I think he tried to play Catherine Newton like, to the best of his ability with, like, the hair stuff and biting on his nails. So, yeah, I don't know. You could tell he just loved it. It made me happy watching Vince just go free.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, listen, obviously this, like, you know, moves into the whole slapstick genre, but he still made it, like, subtle Vince Vaughn style. I mean, it was little things. Like, I don't know. It always feels to me like he's not, like, flamboyant and out there. He's much more in a space, but he's so energetic in that space around himself that it translates so well on screen. So yeah, from like little things, like for instance, I know you love the scene with him and Booker in the car, and like when Nyla goes in. Is Nyla?
Yeah.
The girlfriend. Yeah, Nyla. When she goes in and he's like, oh gosh, and he starts talking in hashtags, like hashtag Nerves of Steel, hashtag what is she doing? Like, he's actually doing it as a girl, as like Millie Catherine, but he's still being subtle. So I laugh every time I watch him. Oh my word. When he also wakes up and that first scream that he does.
Do you got any ice cubes? Do you got any candy canes? You're like, oh, no, and then he gets chased.
Yeah, like when he's like in the bathroom for the first time as well, and he's like, you know, oh wow, look at this floppy anteater. Do I wipe?
Oh yeah.
I love that so much. It's like this little, and he's like, do I wipe? And then he's not getting an answer, and then you see him go for the toilet paper. They don't show it, but like, it's just these little, like, tiny things that he does that I thought was, I mean, he got a lot of praise for this. Both of them did, and both of them deserved it, because it was, like, very well done. Like, it could have easily have been too much, easily. But I think they managed to control it and, like, you know, try and give it a more realistic vibe, even though it's this whole Freaky Friday, like, body swap, a high concept. It was just, this movie is so fun. Like, I watched it again this afternoon in preparation for the pod, and I just laugh all the time. The intro scene is amazing. The intro, the opening.
Oh my gosh,
scene.
Those four kills are gnarly. Woof.
It's so good, and it's different, but like, so hilarious at the same time. When we've got the bottle first, then we've got the toilet smashing.
Oh man.
Yeah.
And he said, I thought it was really funny. He just wanted to be very violent. And then he kind of went in tongue in cheek, but I thought it was kind of funny when he said that the tennis racket kill was kind of bougie. So he felt like that was appropriate for the house. And it just made me laugh, that kill. Yeah. Because, oh, and I have a question for you. I was watching, so I like to watch Dead Meat. They do that kill count. I just like James H. and East, and I like watching those videos. But they were talking about how there's a complaint about how Vince Vaughn played Millie in a way that was much different from Catherine Newton. And she definitely had, I love the little scene in the beginning when she's walking in the school and she ducks in between two people when she doesn't have to. And just her mannerisms of being kind of mousy. She's way too picked on, by the way. Like, people, no, we'll get down there. But they said that her and Vince's body, or the Blissfield Butcher's body, is too out there. Like, she was shy in the movie, but then in his body. But I think the whole point is she's becoming more confident, and you're in this large 6'4", 200-plus person. So you're more confident. Like, does that make sense? Like, it's not, I don't think she's acting differently, but you and I think more confident, right? You're in this huge thing, and you're just having fun with it. I don't know why. It would be weird if she played her role all quiet again, and then you have the Blissfield Butcher being all quiet. It just wouldn't work. You need that energy.
Yeah, you definitely need that. I do get what people are saying, but I do think that you can, like, you know, suspend the belief within the story and the fictional story that, yeah, she's... Dude, if you wake up and you're this big giant with all this strength and... Oh, testosterone on top of it all.
Mm.
Yeah, you're probably going to be a bit different because suddenly you've got testosterone. So, you know, like, I buy it. I do. I can understand where the confidence comes from. And you know what they can say? There's more confidence, or like, because that's part of the story. She's supposed to, like, get more confidence, and that happens. But she's still rambling on. She's still like, you know, it's not like she's all of a sudden... Yeah, I'm in charge and I know what to do. And now she's still like rambling and being this big giant dude, but yeah, being all girly. Like even when she talks to Booker, you know, when they get Booker on the, I love it where she also pushes Booker, like, you know, into the wall,
levels
and
him
out, because yeah, she's not used to like the strength that men have, again, with testosterone and muscle. And then yeah, he wakes up on the couch and freaks out because who are you, and she starts talking to him. There's a lot of rambling happening there, but I mean, it's like it's really now or never, because what a situation. I mean, what is she supposed to do? Just go, like, you know, hide away and cry for days? That's not a movie anyone wants to watch, and like also a character that you really want to root for at the end of the day. So I think, yeah, this is kind of like, okay, well, this is the situation. You got to make the best of it, like right now, because there's a time thing happening as well. Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a problem with that. I get what they're saying, but I think the fact that she woke up in a different body, I mean, we've seen body swaps. You put you know, those movies with like, the average girl, like she's mousy and shy and whatever, and then put her in a sexy body and all of a sudden she has confidence. Yeah. That's, I mean, why is it okay there but not here? Like, I feel like it's very much the same thing in a way. This is just, you wake up in a body pumping with testosterone.
Yeah. And you're a burly, and you're a burly man.
You're a burly man. Old. I mean, a bit old. My one thing was, like, I would have loved if they did a little joke where, like, you know, she has to walk around in Vince Vaughn's body, like, you know, in story concept, narrative. And it's like, yeah, balls are dropping a bit. So maybe also walk a bit funny. I don't know. That would have been funny, I think. But
yeah, just feeling new parts of your... Remember in... I don't know if you've seen Avatar, but when Jake Sully gets into the, what, Na'vi body, and he just starts running and screaming and yelling after being really dour. I don't know, that could have been something like that, but what you just said, and a lot more R-rated.
What
the,
I just said, yeah.
You know what I just remembered? She was in Paranormal Activity 4, which was written by Landon. So they've been working together for...
I saw that too,
a while now, like 8 years they've known each other. Have you seen her IMDb? She went from Bad Teacher to Paranormal Activity 4... Then went to Lady Bird? Jeez Louise. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Halt and Catch Fire. Little Women. Supernatural. Blockers, which was really popular. Detective Pikachu, really popular. Little Big Lies, which was really... And then she did Freaky and Map of Tiny Perfect Things, which I really like. That's a fun flick right there that's on Amazon. I don't know if you've watched it yet, but she's really good in it. It's a time loop movie. Kind of like... Groundhog Day-esque, or Happy Death Day. But you know what? I'm going to switch subjects completely. I like that Landon takes these high concept ideas that are quite familiar. You have Happy Death Day, which is a very familiar idea, but it limits the budget because you're repeating the same thing every day, so you can keep the budget down, locations down. But they make it so good, and Jessica Roth is just so alive in it. And then in this one, everyone's seen Freaky Friday or what, Big... Or the one with Fred Savage where they swap bodies. Like, this is nothing new, but it's just a funny... Hot Chick. This one's... I guess the idea is not new, but I like... I don't know. He takes really ideas we've seen before.
Ups.
Yeah, he... Yeah, there it is. Yeah, like a time loop horror movie. Or a body swap horror movie. And I like that about him. I think that he said he writes movies he wants to see. And whenever I hear the... When I heard the idea of Freaky, I went, I want to see that.
Totally. Yeah. I was like, yes. Gimme.
I mean, it's inspired, right?
It is. I mean, what's interesting is, so like, Michael Kennedy wrote this with Christopher Landon, right? Because he kind of came up with the idea, but Landon inspired him. So Michael Kennedy was like still new in Hollywood, trying to like break in. He was like working on productions. I think he was on, it's one of your big animated, I want to say Family Dad or something. I don't know. I can't remember. But so like, he said, like, so, okay, growing up, because I read this cool interview that he did, Midwest Movie Maker had a cool interview with him, and he said he wasn't really big on horror movies, and then when he was growing up, and then his friends tricked him into watching the romantic comedy, also known as Scream. So they tricked him. But he said, like, 5 minutes in, and he was hooked. He said he's never really watched, like, a scary movie before, but he was so hooked. He wasn't even mad at them. So after that, like, he really liked it. And And he liked, you know, with Sidney Prescott, like you said, I've actually got a quote here, the transformation from this quiet, rather fearful person into this total badass, like that just spoke to him, right? And he could also identify with Sidney's need to overcome her fears and embrace her true self and whatever. So then, like fast forward in 2018, Michael Kennedy's dad passed away. And like, that was like a big knock for him. And he said like he was dealing with like, you know, the grief and such a big loss. And then he watched Landon's Happy Death Day and he said it totally struck a chord with him. So like, you know, you've got this Happy Death Day and Scream that's like an influence with him, and both movies dealing with the loss of a parent. So it makes sense like that it spoke to him. And then he was like in his own words, how can I rip this off? You know, like watching Happy Death Day. So then he was took the Freaky Friday thing, like how Happy Death Day was the Groundhog Day mashup with a straight slasher. He thought about Freaky Friday. And then he phoned up Landon because they were kind of like working, I think it was through Blue Mouse, like they knew each other through there. And then he was like, okay, can I pitch this movie to you that I want to like pitch? But like, and Landon loved it immediately. Like they started doing rewrites on it the next day and the rest, yeah. Oh, and also the initial title was Killer Body. That was Kennedy's first title.
Oh,
and
man.
Then I know during filming, they called it Freaky Friday the 13th. And then it ended up just being Freaky.
I mean, didn't they get a cease and desist about Freaky Friday the 13th? Because that would have been, I don't know, is that too cute? Is that?
Oh, for real?
Is that too cute or is Freaky better? What do you think?
I don't mind Freaky Friday the 13th. I don't know.
It's good.
Yeah.
But Happy Death Day is super cute too, though. So, and then Happy Death Day to you.
And again, also, this is like, it's movie for teens also, like, you know.
Yeah, so that's true.
I think being cute is fine because it's not catered for 30-year-old, even though we love it too. But, you know.
This would have been a good movie to watch at 16, 17. Just the super gore, the humor.
Oh, totally.
And I like how gory this movie is too. There's some gnarly gore in here, and that makes me so happy. I mean, okay, before we get into the gore, I want to know, you know what I also liked was the mom. She kind of reminded me of moms I knew in high school, and then, like, they're kind of couch moms where they get drunk and pass out on the couch. I don't know. Yeah. Like, but that her character sort of spoke to me. There was a sadness there. And then, you know, the actress is excellent. She was in a show called Bloodline that I liked a lot, but I don't know. I just thought, wait, what was her name? The actress's name is...
Katie Finneran.
Oh, yeah, Katie Finneran. Yeah.
Finneran.
I thought she did a good job. I liked her scene and, you know, talking to Vince. And I mean, she's a stock mom, but it kind of... I knew couch moms in high school. So I kind of related to... I liked her character a lot for some reason. Because she was a couch mom who drinks Swan Song wine and then passes out on the couch. I don't know.
I mean, I'll tell you, like, I think I related with Char a lot, like the oldest sister, maybe because I am the oldest sister. And like, I was just like, the way she was annoyed with her mother. Yeah. Like, I was like, no, this mom annoys me. but like, she's really only annoying in the beginning, where it is kind of like, yeah, she's not really helping her daughter. She's like, no, don't go out and have a social life. Stay home with me. Or like, you know, let's go and watch a thing and whatever. But then later on when she talks to Millie in Vince's body, in the butcher's body, that is a good scene. Like, that was a scene where I definitely turned more towards her and felt like, oh, shame. Yeah, she needs friends too. Mama needs friends too.
And they were being so mean about her too. When like she works at the store, and just Ryler, which I love that name, Ryler.
Ugh.
And then she gets Ryler. Frozen, and she's talking about the clam. She's like the clam jam.
But, I've got AP bio. I didn't come here to clam jam.
Why are they so worst?
Though. She's such a terrible mean girl. Oh.
And Landon in the commentary, he's like, you know. I guess where's my notes? What did he say? He's like, I wrote Ryler is kind of a mean girl type thing. He's like, I'm a gay guy. So like a lot of gay guys are just kind of like real sassy. So then they always got to have like a mean girl. So if you think of Happy Death Day, they have her, Tree's, let's see, who is she? Tree's sorority. Sorority member? Sorority sister? That's super sister, sassy. So like Landon loves adding some sassiness, sassy characters, but Ryler, she's next level in this one. She's just, why is everyone so mean to Millie? Like the people are like, if you put a bag on her head, she'd be all right. And then just corner her. She seems like a nice kid. I don't know why she gets picked on. Is that for the script?
Yeah, honestly, I think that's just like, story, like genre type of beats that they hit. Because I was also like, oh, is this really necessary? Because Millie, I feel like I need a backstory there. What happened? Did she do something stupid that made everyone just like pick on her or something, and it just got progressively worse, as it sometimes happens? Because Millie is so harmless, really. But then again, bullies, don't really know how they pick it. Like, it could also just be because like Millie's dad isn't in the picture anymore. Because I can tell you that as someone that comes from there, yeah, I got picked on because my dad died. It's weird.
Oh, really?
It's weird. And they don't make sense. And it's terrible.
But
that is actually something that happens. I think it's just because when you're young, you don't know how to deal with those type of things. So they don't know how to deal with you. They don't know what to tell you. So just making fun of a person or making light of situations, like, I think that becomes kind of like a go-to just for them to deal with it, but then they don't realize how mean they actually come across because they're stupid kids.
And she's quite passive too, so it's almost like an easy mark. You're not getting someone fighting.
Yeah, she just allows them. Yeah.
And also, the first time I watched this, the one thing I didn't know if I was completely sold on, and Landon touched on this in the commentary, so I'm glad I picked up on it, but every character in this movie is killable. Like, every single person. You're kind of rooting for a lot of these people to get murdered in this film. Yeah. They're just horrible kids. Do you like that? Like, it just seemed, I guess that took out a lot of the tension in the movie because you were rooting for a serial killer to kill people. So it kind of, I guess I'm old too. Maybe if I was 16, I could watch this differently. And horror movies have been doing this for years. But I think the kills all lacked tension because you're almost supposed to be happy that these kids are getting murdered. But I guess this isn't a tense film. This is more of a comedy horror movie. But did you like that every character was just so killable?
I actually did, in the sense that, like, because I think, because this movie is a lot of comedy, but it's also got a lot of social commentary. And that was actually a nice thing that happened, because, so you've got the Blissfield Butcher, that is supposedly this urban legend, like, every year this thing pops up and like of this guy, but these kids, clearly it hasn't happened yet for them. Otherwise they would be like, oh gosh. So, and then this is the year it happens. He comes to Blissfield and like does this all over again. He kills teenagers. But then when he switches bodies with Millie, like he starts gunning for basically the sexist guys. Like, if you're like a mean, except for Ryler, who's just a mean girl, but like basically everyone that's gunning for Millie, he's going for them. Like that terrible Mr. Fletcher, oh gosh, he was over the top bad.
So bad.
Like at the beginning, I was like, oh gosh, yeah, you guys really just like wrote this guy to make him like the worst teacher ever. But then I love every time when just before like, Millie kills him, like, the butcher kills him in Millie's body. He's grading papers. We see him, the scene starts, and he's just sitting there grading papers, and he's just looking at one of the papers, and he's like, what kind of a name is this? Stupid name.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, like, terrible. He's, like, the worst of worst of worst. but, like, yeah, he's, like, gunning for Millie. And, I mean, he didn't know Millie was the butcher, and he kicked her in the stomach. Like, that was... Jeez, that was also like hard to watch. Yeah, like it's like, from there on, it's like the butcher goes for everyone. Like he sort of becomes like the predator bringing in the prey, everyone that wants her body, like, you know, and then offing them. And I kind of like that because I think it was more of a commentary on that. It was a fun way of doing it. Like, you don't really see it being done that way and that obvious. I liked it. It was fun. No, it's sometimes fun to cheer for, like, the bad guys to get their comeuppance, you know?
It's and grown on me.
Your genitals torn off by a chainsaw, but, you know,
oh, gosh,
it was fun in the movie.
That was death by genital chainsawing. But no, you're right though, because
this movie is a lot under the belt. It is, like, it goes there. So yeah.
And I guess the people who are aggressive with the like, they make it easy for the butcher. So they're used to kind of picking on her, Millie, and so then when they go after the butcher, like, they make themselves really easy prey. So I think that's I guess for me, the first time I saw it, you're not really used to that. There are normally unlikable characters. But this was just so far out there. But then eventually you watch it more and you kind of dig it. I still think, though, that Ryler is just a A-plus mean girl, though.
She's the worst.
She talks about the discount at the discount bonanza if they get a, like, employee discount. And then she's like, bye. So it's kind of earnest about it. So, like, wait, does she like her? Like, I don't know. Ryler...
No, she's a maniac. Doesn't. She's a bully.
She's a maniac.
She's just with her posse.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I mean, she's a spoiled brat.
Yeah.
That's what she is.
And, like, they're in a school with a cryo chamber. That's incredibly expensive.
That was my first, like, big thing that took me out a bit, because I was like, how expensive is this school? What do you have there in America at your schools? Like, is that at a school?
I researched this, and high school programs around the States, we're talking the bigger schools, they are massive, and there are cryo chambers there. And Landon actually got the idea one day when he was at a place and he saw someone in LA, I think it was, who was going in to go into the cryo chamber. And he asked, Landon was like, how much can I pay you to make it really cold and freeze this person? And that's where the idea came from. But you know what's cool? That this was filmed near us. So we go to this really neat brewery called Cherry Street. And on our way to Cherry Street, there's this gigantic, brand new high school. It's massive with a big stadium that probably gets packed up. Thousands of people go to watch it. And we actually drive past that all the time where they filmed. It's a brand new high school they filmed in. And they filmed it when school was in session, which is crazy because I'd worked on a movie called Premature. Actually, it's a time loop movie. Premature. It's a time loop sex comedy, R-rated. A24 released it. But I worked on it. We were in an abandoned high school. Or did shoot during the summer. It was so long ago. But we had no one there, so it was really easy control. They shot in a live high school when they were making this because that was the time they needed to shoot. But it's... I don't know. I thought, but it's cool. I know a lot of the locations around here. So they were shooting the chase scene. Like, Megan works near that area. So it's kind of fun to watch this movie and be like, oh, we know where that is. Like, the downtown is 15 minutes from us where they shot. So I thought it was pretty cool. Like, that movie hits closer to home because I know where everything is.
Yeah. Well, that is cool.
It makes me happy. Hey, so how about this? Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we will talk more freaky. We will be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And you want to know something interesting?
Yes, please.
So they shot this movie between... It went from October to December 2019. So December 2019. By the time that they wanted to maybe potentially do some reshoots, they couldn't because of COVID. They were just too worried about getting back in. Like, by the time the edit was there, they almost... Like, they didn't, nothing's reshot in this movie, which is really rare for movies. But I think it's still quite cohesive, and Landon was saying that they almost didn't have the ending, so they had the ending in the script where the Blissfield butcher's killed, they drive away, she gets her kiss with Booker. But then they both talked about it and said that Millie needs to get her victory over the butcher in her body, not in the butcher's body. Because if you just make this whole movie where she gains confidence, and then that's it, you don't see her... at the end, say I'm a total piece, like, you've kind of lost a lot of the point of the movie. So they quickly wrote that in, and he talked about how lucky they got that they wrote that in and shot it, because that's something they probably, you know, in any other case, if there's a bad test screen and you reshoot the ending. But they got really lucky with that. And I like the ending, how the three finally came together and how they work together to kill what Coral and her sister, and then Millie, how they teamed up to take down the Butcher. I like that a lot. It was fun at the end, like just the teamwork.
Yeah, it's funny because when I watched it the first time and the ending happened, like the immediate second that it happened, I was like, oh, no, really? Are you bringing it back? Is this still... It was so quick that I changed my mind, you know, from all of it, because like, it again, I liked how they kind of again went back to the Halloween homage, because we haven't even talked about all the like
horror homages so many.
And stuff. And I mean, there's a lot of Halloween in this, and that's a very Halloween thing. Like, yeah, Michael just can't die. So like, he's always coming back and like that whole thing. And so it was again, reverting back to the homage with him. But then, yes, I totally liked it that it was the three women in the house. Like, you know, Dad's not there anymore. Like, kind of taking a stand, all three fighting him. That was really cool. And then, excellent final line. Excellent, excellent final line to a movie. That's just great. Like, it leaves you on a high. Mm-hmm. It really, yeah. No, that's like a big old high five.
And Char just goes, wow. Her sister finally... Yeah. Stuck up for her. And I gotta say, Char walked into the house one time and she's like, this house smells like a Denny's. And there's nothing... do you know Denny's? I'm sorry if... I don't know if you got that reference.
Denny's. Okay, cool. Yeah, that was with the breakfast. Yeah, the breakfast, I think. Yeah.
But that sounds great. Like, I would have loved to have had that breakfast in high school. So when she said this smells like a Denny's, I'm like, that's amazing. Why? But I guess it also, you gotta look at it as maybe Coral... Let's see, Coral... overcompensating, so she messed up, she became the mom on couch, and then she just makes a nice big breakfast in the morning. Does that make sense? So it's, you kind of see it as, oh, you messed up, so you made a big breakfast, like, I'm kind of tired of this. I don't know if you've read it like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I just think Char is like at that point where that's why I kind of would have liked to see a bit more of her. I know it's not her story, but it is a lot. Like, it feels like it's Millie's story, but then it's also a family story, you know, because we've got a bit of the mom, but it feels like we didn't have enough of the older sis. Because, she definitely has problems with the way that her mom's dealing with it, because I think they just probably don't talk about anything enough, really, you know? They're kind of just, like, trying to Band-aid. What does that sound so weird now?
Put a Band-Aid over it?
Band-Aid. Band-Aid. What? That's not a word. But
It is now.
But yeah, so I feel like she's just critical about everything her mother's doing right now. Because, I mean, yeah, I also thought like, oh, so is Denny's bad? Because, yeah, I don't know. I know of Denny's. I've never been to a Denny's. I was like, is it bad? And now she's just saying it with an attitude because she's just like criticizing her mom. Like, mom can't do everything right. Which, I mean, in a way, she's not wrong because, like, yeah, like lunging for the wine bottle all the time and kind of like trying to shelter your youngest isn't the best.
Taking her to regional theater during homecoming. That's not a good look.
Yeah, it's not the best, but. Yeah, I mean, also shame. Like, yeah, I would have liked maybe, like, a scene with Char, just maybe to show, like, a perspective a bit more, because I liked her character. I liked the big sis. I mean, listen, I am here for the sequel.
Oh, make
I'm here for the sequel.
Because he's not dead. He'll come back. Blissfield Butcher's still... LaDola is still around. Blissfield Butcher's still alive.
We can have another serial killer. Like, I mean... You know, why does it, it's not, it's the Dola is not, the Dola is a thing on its own. You know, it's not like the Blissfield Butcher's Dola. So like,
all right, let's dreamcast it. Let's dreamcast it. So I want to see, okay, Aubrey Plaza. Jack Black and Aubrey Plaza.
There we go. I mean, it's too easy for us.
Yeah.
It's too easy for us.
That'd be hilarious. She's switching.
High res for casting directors, Hollywood. High res.
I just think that'd be funny. She's like Aubrey Plaza, a serial killer who switches bodies with like a teenager boy. That'd be. They've never done that, have they? Guy and the woman. Woman and oh, freaky. They just did that. Never mind. Yeah, do that. But a younger kid into like a grown woman. That'd be interesting. I don't know. I just want to see Aubrey Plaza in one of these movies killing people.
Yeah. Or maybe like. Yeah. No. Ooh, no, I'm drawing blank.
Wait, I have one more thing. What do you think about the introduction of Nyla and Josh when they're at school? You know, Josh is talking about how, you know, I want these people to get drunk so they can, I can take care of, like, take advantage of their fluidity. And then you have Nyla, yeah. You have Nyla who is, they're both sort of telling Millie how to live. And I was talking to Megan about that, my wife, and she's like, yeah, you know, who else would tell you that? It's almost like therapy. They're, who else would sort of get you out of your bubble? It was kind of odd, though. My first reaction was like, man, like, they haven't gone through, presumably, what she's gone through, and they're telling her how to be. But I also think it's not bad advice, but it does seem like they sort of push her over a little bit, telling her what to do. And her sister opens up, takes jars from her hands and opens those up. Her mom takes her to this. And it seems like everybody has this, not control over her, but they just kind of tell her what to do or open the jars for her. Did you kind of pick up on that vibe?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I did feel like her friends was kind of trying to support her to not just, like, you know, hide away at home. And, like, but you are a catch. Like, Nyla tells her, you're a catch. You're good. Like, mm-hmm. Don't put yourself down like that. But, I mean, I just saw it as, like, normal friend stuff. Like, oh, no, come on. You must come out with us. Like, you know?
That's fair. No, you're right.
I did like the whole fact where Josh was like, he said that whole thing, yeah, about like drunk, like straight guys, jocks or whatever. And Nyla was like, wow, that's a bit rapey. But then at the end, you had the drunk jock guy that actually pulled moves on Josh,
mm-hmm.
which, yeah, I like kind of liked that whole thing because the first time I heard that line, I was like, whoa. But mm-hmm. I mean, I liked how they pushed the, you know, it felt very realistic in a, mm-hmm. like in a lot of ways, you know, like how people would talk. You've got your people like Nyla that'll say, dude, that's not actually a cool thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the people that's like, you know, they are progressive and they've got their own stuff going on, but they might not see it always from, you know, a different perspective. Like Josh wouldn't necessarily understand where Nyla as a woman's coming from. And I just like that whole dynamic where it felt very real. Like, you know, it's not these everyone's saying the right thing all the time vibe, because that's irritating and feels preachy. But yeah, I like their dynamics. It was fun. Yeah, it was fun.
It felt lived in. And I like that. I like the photo of Josh and his mom in their house where they're back to back with the gigantic smiles. Did you see
also,
that picture?
I love his mom.
Yeah.
I want more of it too.
Oh man,
his mom is a hoot.
We're
She's
role
like,
playing.
Josh. You're not straight. Oh, you're a lot of things, but you're not straight.
The Blissfield Butcher laughed when he said that. Like, they both laughed.
Like, really?
Oh, and a funny story. Landon actually ended up buying, Newton. He bought her a new dress that she had been eyeing on Etsy because he kept shoving socks in her mouth. So he felt bad for her. So she had been talking about this dress she liked, so he just went and bought it for her. Because she had to put up with having socks and duct tape all over her face. Not like they put a Velcro over the other end so it didn't rip off her face. But I thought that was nice that Landon bought her a dress for shoving a sock in her mouth so many times. Yeah. It's fun,
that's
right?
Christopher Landon, if you're listening to this, I've got some trauma from that opening scene. So I'll send you my Amazon wish list. And, you know, you can make it up to me anytime you're ready.
And how about that kitchen fight?
I'm a sucker for a kitchen fight.
I love that kitchen.
It's one of my favorites.
They throw the taters at him. And he's like, oh, really? Oh, I love it.
It's one of my favorites because it's like these kids and like Millie in this big giant body. And it's, this is one of my, it's one of my top three favorite kitchen fights. It's Freaky, Spy, and Deep Blue Sea, where a man fights in the dark.
Can't argue with
it. My three favorite kitchen fight scenes.
Can't argue with that. You really can't. It's a fun. I like Spy because it's a really good fight. Like the two of them are excellent fighters and they use the props so well and it makes me happy. But I love the tater tot throw. I love them chasing through the kitchen and just him realizing her pronouns. It's her realizing her power in the butcher's body. It just, it's fun. I just love a good tater tot gag too. Just throwing the tater tots.
You know what? Like, I mean, I hear, like, to go back to what you also said with people like kind of saying she wasn't really how she was in his body and stuff. But if you really think about it, I mean, in that kitchen fight, right? She didn't fight them. She was defending herself, like through most of that. They were like knocking her with everything they could, spatulas and like, you know, potato tarts and like everything. It really took a while for her to actually become physical, which, yeah, because she wouldn't just be physical. It's not like her. So now I think there might be a little more subtlety to how they actually played that whole thing out that worked, that is actually realistic.
And I love how resolved it got so quickly resolved. That made me so happy that they did the dance, they did the handshake, and...
Shake, bitches. And So cute.
They rehearsed that on set, which makes me happy. The behind-the-scenes stuff showed Vince dancing with somebody. It kind of made me laugh. No, but I like that they got that out of the way quick, and then they were immediately on their side. And then you had the slowest car chase ever, which made me happy. And then also John Goodman, they wanted to use his mask at first, but he said no. And then Aaron Rodgers just went, of course, you can use my helmet. I don't care. That sounds like fun.
Cool.
Oh, another cool story. So when she is dressed up as the badger and is attacked, which is such a silly scene. I mean, just a mascot beaver. Being chased. A beaver. Yeah. And I like that the signs too are for what, manure and hospice. I don't know.
Yeah!
That's so funny. But when, what was I going to say? Oh, when that was originally just going to be a football field. But Landon was like, I really want this temple. But he didn't think they would afford it because it's such a low budget picture. But he went ahead and just laid green screen down and had the actors do it anyway. And then he's like, I knew I would put it in later. He's like, but I did not ask for permission. I just went ahead and did it. So this guy knew he could get in trouble for it and had to cut other things in other places, but he still threw that down there to have that really cool visual effect of the Aztec temple. And I thought that was kind of a neat workaround. And I have a question for you. So these Blumhouse movies do allow creative control for the directors, and it appears that the directors do enjoy having that creative control. The issue is you have to cut out so much out of your script to fit the budget. If you have one bad day, you have to lose a day. You have to lose pages. So is it complete creative control? I guess you're getting your movie made, and you wouldn't normally get it made with a higher budget. So I guess to get it made for $6 million and cut out a decent chunk of stuff forces you to be creative, but I wouldn't say you have total creative control because you have to lose a lot. But I guess you get control over what you lose. Does that make sense?
Yeah, listen, so... I went to study drama, and I specialized in script writing and directing. So I did some directing, and one of the things that I loved about it immediately, because it just suited me very well, is that directing is all about problem solving. That is also a kind of a control, you know, you can get control there. Because listen, yeah, if you're going to lose a day, or whether it's being like all nasty and you need to make a plan, you need to make a plan. So like, sure, you can like lose stuff there or cut stuff there, but it's still on you to, I mean, if you can find a solution, fantastic, but it's going to be on you. So I think, yeah, I do think you still have some control. There will be, I mean, times where there's just not, you know, a viable solution available and you need to like make the hard decisions and stuff. But I think directing in general really leans into a lot of getting, like you said, like the creativity of it and the problem solving. And I feel like there is control in problem solving. That's why I like it. I feel like I'm in control of a problem because I'm trying to solve it or trying to find the best way to solve it. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. And you have control over what you are cutting. Now, you have to cut stuff because you have to hit the budget, but you're not being told what to cut by producers. You, the director and the screenwriter.
Exactly.
And I'm sure there's a line producer on set as well, and the second AD, and you probably got to get the first AD on board too, because you can't just cut things and not tell a producer. That would be wild.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have control over the cuts. You have final cut. You have control. You're not getting frozen out. You don't have studio interference. So yeah, no, I think you're right. I guess you do have control, but you do have to sacrifice a lot for that control. But you probably couldn't. This movie probably couldn't have been made for $30 million. I don't think a studio would have shelled out $30 million for this.
No, I mean, why? Honestly,
yeah, it's stupid. Like, I don't know why they don't make a Happy Death Day 2. It makes no sense. I don't get it. Just give him $15 million. It'll make I know it won't make much, but let's say it pulls in $60 million worldwide and then sells on DVD. You've made a profit. Why don't they do it, Zanandi? Why? Why?
I do not have the answers.
Why?
Yeah. No, I think I really love it, though, that they're doing all these. Because, I mean, like, that's the thing. It's also, again, about being creative. Like you said, they're using the same sets over and over. But think about it, like, in the school, the only space that you really see over is, like, the hallway where the lockers are and then Mr. Fletcher's classroom. I think that's the only space that really gets recycled. Like, the bathroom, every time it's a different angle, so it looks different every time. You've got, like, with the dance, you've got, like, the spook house that they built. That's all neon and actually made me think about the guests. Like, you know, that neon spook house vibe, like, for
scary. That was an actual location. They were supposed to shoot in a bowling alley, and they found that golf course with the black light.
Oh, cool.
Sorry,
cool.
I interrupted you, but I have so much research on this, I had to throw that out.
Yeah, you need to get them out now, like, quick. Bullet points. But yeah, I think, like, you know, it never felt like, oh, okay, we're at the school again here. And it never felt like that at all. And just shows you how much you really can do. Like, I honestly like it. I like to hear that a movie had a small budget and it still did well and it looked so well. Because I don't feel like you need all the money in the world to, like, you know, put your creativity out there. I think that's kind of a cop-out. It's too easy. Like, I'm more impressed with people that can take $6 million and do a freaking good-looking movie. Yeah, like, without being, this looks pretty crap. No. Even the CGI thing with the whole, like, Aztec ruin thing that they were at the temple, like, that looks so good.
Oh, I love the look of that. There's nothing in this movie that really took me out or felt stretched, and that's nothing. What I dig about it. And $6 million,
that's nothing if you look at movie budgets. That's like, and I mean, I'm sorry, but that just proves that you can do it. So I'm like, what's everyone else's excuse?
And I remember I tweeted about that. I tweeted about that, and Catherine Newton liked it on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
When we did the horror.
Yeah.
2020. Yeah.
I was like, hey, that's cool. Hey, I got something fun for us before we get out of here. Okay. This is what I want to do. Because I want to honor Tony Gardner. He was a special effects makeup on this. He was responsible for the Alan Rucks being body being ripped in half. All the gags, all the neck gags, all the bloody gags. So if you type in Tony Gardner on IMDb, can you?
American designer. Got him.
Got him. So I want to do something. I want to do a Tony Gardner draft where you pick 5 Tony Gardner movies anything he's worked on. You pick 5 Tony Gardner movies and I pick in the makeup department. He has 167 credits just in the makeup department.
Wow, I see. Oh, Hocus Pocus. And
so, I mean, there is a lot here. I mean, actually, you can pick anything. He's done 57 special effects. He was the animatronic effects supervisor on Cult of Chucky. So he's done all the special effects. He's been working on Chucky forever. Anything from his page. Like, the guy was on Cocoon. He was in Thriller. Evil Dead 2. Lost Boys. So you can take anything in here from his IMDb page. And we'll pick 5 each.
Amazing. Okay, cool.
He designed the mascot mask for Happy Death Day, by the way.
That's cool. That's a good mask. That's a good mask. And, like, I felt like we also needed a new mask. And I think, yeah, you nailed it.
He's been a costume designer. He was an uncredited costume designer in Tank Girl.
What?
Yeah. Isn't that awesome? All right. So I'll give you first pick. I mean, there's hundreds of movies to pick from. So good luck, because we're going to have to sort through a lot.
Yeah, I'm sorting. Oh, you're going to hate me.
Yeah, like, sorting.
Go ahead and hate me.
Do it.
I'm gonna,
do it. Let's go. Let's promote this guy's work. Let's show the big stuff he's worked on.
You know, I love this movie a lot though. So, like,
pick Ringers.
Smoking Aces.
Okay. Yeah. And he did the work on that.
I love Smoking Aces. Yeah. Amazing. Wow. He's done a lot of TV shows in here too.
All right. I thought you were going to pick Aliens or something, cause he's worked on Aliens.
Getting there. That's a lot. And like I say, there's a lot of TV shows in here too. Wow.
All right, since you didn't take a huge ringer with your first pick, I'll try to pick one too that's not like a gigantic movie.
Go for it.
No. I want to find something. Like, I just want to really promote the. Oh, you know what? I'll take Jackass. He did a lot of the stuff on Jackass. So he's done Jackass 1, Jackass 2. I love it. What's your second movie you're going to take from him?
Oh, no. This is a different. He was on The Craft.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He worked on The Craft. Yes.
I thought you were going to pick that first, actually, when you said it.
Yeah. I'm like, listen, I'm scrolling down. So, like, I'm going from new to old. So, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So
you're
many...
not surprised I took The Craft.
He was on Thriller. That's so cool. All right. Let's see. All the Chucky movies. He did a lot of, he's done a lot of animatronics. He was on Happy Death Day, but I pick that all the time. I'm always picking
like,
that movie.
For it.
I wanna, let's see. I wanna pick something different though. Just so people can be like, holy crap, he worked on that? He did Zombieland. Jeez Louise. So good.
He did the animatronic cat effects in Hocus Pocus.
Wow.
And the makeup effects design and the special makeup effects art as well.
I need to hurry up here. People are just, but I just like reading from his IMDb. Okay. I'm going to cheat a little bit, but I love the makeup and I remember watching this movie and absolutely adoring it. So I'm going to say Darkman.
I was looking at it right now and that would have been my next pick. So good one. Good one. Fantastic.
All right. Who's your third?
Okay. I'm going to pick like the one where he was special makeup and animatronic effects designer and supervisor. And the whole thing is The Blob.
Yeah. He's done so much.
He's done so much, dude. Amazing.
All right. I know Army of Darkness is a ringer, so I won't take that.
I'll take it, man. Right. I'll take a ringer after you.
Okay. I'll do, because he did Evil Ash. I love Evil Ash. So you got to do that. All right. So yeah, you get a ringer now.
Okay. So you're going to go with what?
I'm going to take Army of Darkness.
Okay. Army of Darkness. Then I'm going to take The Lost Boys.
Oh, yeah. Good one. There's some great effects on that one.
Yeah, no, I watched it like a while ago again. Yeah.
What's his oldest Chucky movie? Let's say I'll take one of those. I'm not going to do Evil Dead 2. That's way too much. So I will take, I really like Cult of Chucky. So I'll take Cult of Chucky because that showcases his animatronic work.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So we each get one more. You have Smoking Aces, The Craft, The Blob, The Lost Boys.
One more. Ooh, I'm sorry, but yeah, like wow, just going through so many things. He worked on Freddy Got Fingered.
And there's something about Mary. He was a gorilla supervisor on Ace Ventura When Nature Calls.
Oh, wow, okay. That's something.
He was on Royal Tenenbaums. He did props.
He worked on Adaptation, too.
Well, that's a good one. Oh, he did miniatures and Hard Rain.
Oh, my word. Sorry, I'm taking, like, it's taking a while now.
This is fun, though, isn't it?
It is. Oh, and he was on Zombieland. I'll take Zombieland. Okay. I love Zombieland.
Perfect.
I know that's the
No, it's perfect.
One, but...
And he did the animatronic Animals and Three Amigos, too. That makes me really happy.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. All right, this is probably going to cost me everything, but it's a Rennie Harlan movie, so I'm going to have to take Mindhunters.
Okay, yeah, I saw Mindhunters, and I don't know that one.
It's a bunch
and
of profilers.
Rennie?
Yeah, Rennie Harlan profilers go into an island, and there's a serial killer.
Is it fun? Should I watch it?
Yeah, do it. It's better than people say, and I like it. I'm gonna cover it eventually on the podcast. I gotta cover all Rennie. But yeah, so here's what we're gonna do. You have Smoking Aces, The Craft, The Blob, The Lost Boys, Zombieland. I have Jackass, Darkman, Army of Darkness, Cult of Chucky, Mindhunters, and then I'll just add about 50 other movies he's worked on below us. But also check out, I'll just say watch
special
these.
Mention.
Yeah, because I mean. Just ridiculous.
Do it, because that's the impressive part, really, is like, and even the shows, wow, he's been on everything.
I'm glad we got to promote Tony Gardner. That makes me happy. So that was a fun way to end this. So before we get out of here, favorite kill, favorite moment, favorite line.
Okay, favorite kill. I would probably have to go for like, I love the entire opening scene. Like, I feel all my favorite kills is in the opening scene. But okay, I have to choose one. I'm actually going to go with that beer bottle because, like, so here's the thing. That scene was set up very well. Classic horror. Guy bends down, picks up the broken glass, comes up. Like, you're waiting for someone in the background to jump out and get this guy. So it's like a slow build. And then he does. But then what happens? Like, when he shoves that freaking bottle into this guy's mouth and then, pow, snaps it and it comes through his neck. That was very, very good. So I'm going to go with favorite kill, first kill, favorite kill.
Tennis racket, all day.
I knew you were going to say, like, I wanted to, like, because it's a good one. But, yeah, like, I think the bottles, like, maybe Scooch was just better.
The bottle, the neck gag was wonderful, though. I mean, the tennis racket was too quick, but it just made me laugh. The bottle's way better. Way better.
Every time. The tennis racket is hysterical. Right. It's just hysterical.
Favorite moment?
Favorite moment is also like a difficult one, but I'm going to maybe say the one where he's in the bathroom and like Floppy Anteater, and then she asks, "Do I wipe?" I think I'm going to say that's my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a lot of favorite moments and scenes, really. Like I said, I love the dental dam. I love also where she's running away, you know, when the butcher comes and she's running away in that beaver mascot outfit. That I laugh every time. It's so funny. Like, trying to run away in this
thing
she's got on.
It makes me so happy. And I love when he goes, "Is she cute? Is she looking cute today?" Oh, man. Okay, so my favorite moment, oh, geez, Louise, favorite moment.
So many.
Okay. So many. Okay, favorite moment. There's too many. Okay, I need to hurry up here because we got to get out of here.
Well, I had to pick one, so you need to pick one.
I guess there's too many.
You love the car scene.
Yeah, because they went for it. Like, I like that they went for that, right? I never saw that. I was never watching this going, yeah, Booker and Millie are going to kiss here. And then they do, and I'm like, oh, I appreciate Landon. He goes for it. Like, I did not see that coming, and that was just so different. Like, there's just something different about it, and I enjoyed that. So I'll say that. And then my favorite line. Favorite line is the bit about the hot dog water, because Megan and I were like, what does that mean? So we started researching hot dog water. So that was probably my favorite line, I would say.
It's the hot dog water? What is that again?
She said that Vince Vaughn smelled like hot dog water.
Oh, yeah.
But we researched that forever. And then I don't know why, but the whole thing, like, I skipped. I'm missing API bio. I'm not here for like a clam jet. I was like, what? Ryler, you're a maniac. So that was pretty funny, too. Yeah, I would say the hot dog water, because that made Megan and I research stuff. So I'll say that.
Nice. Yeah, I think my favorite line from, like, there's a lot of great lines. I love the clam jam line. So funny. But I think the last line is probably my favorite.
Oh,
yeah. I'm a freaking beast. Like, I mean, because not only is it a great line, but what a last line to end a movie on. I mean, that was just like, yeah. And then credits roll. That was like perfect. Perfect final line. I think it's really difficult to find the perfect final line and not be too obvious about it. And I just thought this one was so badass and like also so like, of course, that's what she's going to say. And it made me very happy. So the final line is my favorite line.
The guest has a good one, too, where she's like, what the F? I love it.
I guess maybe any like line with F in it will be my favorite.
And then Swiss Army Man has that too, which I like. But no, well, hey, thank you so much for joining. Hey, do you want to, Twitter, right? Or your work? Do you want to tell people where to find you before we get out of here?
Yeah, no, I'm on Twitter. You can check me out. It's 90 on Twitter. That's cool. Yeah.
And also, this is going to be released later, but I put out our Wolf of Snow Hollow episode today. So that's out. So check out our episode we just recorded about the Wolf of Snow Hollow. Well, we recorded back a while ago, but it's out now. So you can look for that. And then I'll include your name when I drop the post and everything. But thank you so much for joining me, Zanandi.
Thanks. Always fun.
This was great. All right. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Zanandi Boetes, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.